This is the Authentic Persuasion Show. Hey everybody, Jason Cutter here. Welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show and welcome to part three of my conversation with the amazing Dr. Kevin Chase from Wazoo. Dr. Kevin, here we are. It's the future and the future is now. Are you ready?
Oh, I'm ready. I'm always ready for the future.
Awesome. And I'm excited because, again, I'm not a futurist. I'm not a researcher. And so I love these kind of conversations when it gets to this part in the episode, as much as I love authenticity and persuasion, duh, obviously. But like this part here is usually stuff I'm not thinking about, stuff that you're seeing because you're in it all the time. It's super fun. For people tuning into this, this is part three of our conversation. So Kevin is an assistant professor of marketing and also the director of a sales program at Washington State University's Pullman campus, also known as Wazoo, in Southeast Washington State. So one of the things that's fascinating is it's a more rural kind of outside of general areas campus. It's a place where people go because they don't want to necessarily be in the city anymore. A lot of Seattle, Western Washington, you know, people who grow up over there, like, I want to get out of the city and I want to go have something different in, you know, wine country, apple country, just get me out of here. And then sometimes they stay. You said, you know, there's people who are there for agricultural ag businesses. Some of them will come there. They enjoy life there away from the city. And then they take all that and go back to the city. And kind of go back and forth. Again, your links will be in the show notes for anyone to catch up with you on LinkedIn or the program. Just wanted to mention and kind of give some background here. So when it comes to the future of sales, Dr. Kevin, what comes to mind first? I won't even tee up a category. Like, what comes to mind?
Oh, man. I mean, I think it's like everybody's been talking about it recently. It's, what is AI going to do to sales? And there's the argument of automation, like what part of the sales process can be automated by AI, and then what parts are best suited for augmentation? Where can AI help salespeople be more effective? And I think that's the million or billion dollar question for a lot of organizations as to what's gonna happen. And so that's what people, all like companies I work with, I'm doing research with, that's one of the big questions that they're asking. And I think we're all trying to figure out right now.
Okay. So where do you see that? Like, obviously, you know, what won't make you draw a line in the sand of what will happen, but I love what you said, automation versus augmentation, right? Like replacing tasks versus supporting salespeople. Where do you see that? Like, let's say short term and then, you know, heading into somewhere down the road.
Yeah. In the short term, I think it's going to be kind of like the Wild West where everybody's going to be trying a lot of different stuff and there's going to be some stuff that works really well and people are going to be really successful and there's going to be others that crash and burn. I think one of the things that is coming down the pipeline that may be sooner than people think, and it's interesting to think about this as well, is what sales roles are going to be replaced or automated by AI. And the thing that's interesting to me is just reading a lot of the forums on like LinkedIn and some of the others, people discussing and say, you know, salespeople will never be fully replaced in any industry because at the end of the day, there's going to be some sort of human element. And one of the things that I'm not saying that they're wrong, but I think there are certain industries where that actually may not be the case, where a lot of times they think of a salesperson in terms of an AI salesperson selling to a human person. And I think a lot of times what people don't think about is we're probably going to see AI salespeople selling to AI buyers. And so there will be no human element. And again, I don't think this is going to be tons of industries, but if you think of things like commodity purchases, for example, or like reverse auctions, where you have people that are literally putting in bids to win like paint contracts or things like that, I think what you may see in the future is that an AI buying program will set parameters of the type of paint quality and quantity and, you know, color or whatever, that the AI buyer will figure all of that out. And there will be AI salespeople that will have parameters on their side and they will just do the bidding and the negotiation automatically. And wow. So I think in certain industries where there's highly commoditized products, we talked about complexity of sales and products in the previous episode, you know, where complexity is low, I think we may see that sales process, selling and buying process, fully automated. And how soon that happens, I don't know, but, you know, there's a lot of, you know, processes like the RFQ process, request for quote process, that a lot of state and government organizations use that could be potentially automated as soon as 5 years. Hmm. Whether or not that happens, I don't know, but that's one of the things that I think may happen.
Well, and it makes sense when you describe it that way and put it in that bucket of like a commodity item. Like, I need this. Here's the parameters of what I need, like a painting mm-hmm. contract. And that's it, right? And let's mm-hmm. just get me the thing. And then there's going back to what we talked about in part two about what buyers don't know that they don't know. And that whole process, it's interesting because I recorded a podcast earlier today that was all about AI. And one of the things I hadn't thought about, because I'm in the camp of like, you'll never replace humans, because if it's complex enough or requires some decision-making, that human, the buyer, the scared human, or the person with goals and you know, isn't sure, they're going to want a human to help them. However, what's fascinating is if you think about the AI that's out there now, when it gets to the point where I can just ask it questions as a potential buyer, if I know what I'm asking or I can get better at it, then I can get a long way down the process without a salesperson, right? And or replace some salespeople and now just turn that into a commodity that I'm now buying. Funny example came up. One of the guys on the show was like, yeah, like we should invent a car GPT where literally you go into this app and you just tell it what you want. It asks you a bunch of questions and tells you what car to buy and where you should buy it. And of course, that's already out there. Like there is a car GPT. And so where will that truly replace things that can be replaced? When that comes up in class, because I'm sure it does because it's here now, like how do you address that? How do you prepare salespeople for the unknown eventuality that they may or may not have a career? Or how do they ensure that they have a longstanding career?
Well, a lot of it is just teaching the students about what the technology does and how to use it to be more effective. Again, this goes to the augmentation. Like, how can you use this program or these programs? We'll just use ChatGPT because it's the most popular right now. But how do you use these programs to make yourself more effective? And I'll give you an example of this. I have my students in class use ChatGPT to turn in an assignment. And what I have them do is they have a customer, and what I have the assignment is use ChatGPT to develop a questioning strategy for the customer based on the information that I've given them. And so there's generally my suggestion is like, okay, here's what you can do is you can literally just input the information that I gave you and it'll give you a list of questions. And some of you will just take these questions and you'll turn that in as your assignment. But the people that will really be effective are the ones that'll take that and they'll build off of it. And they'll be able to say these questions are bad or this one needs to be rephrased or whatever. And what they can do is develop kind of a baseline first as kind of a brainstorming, and then they edit that and use their own knowledge and skill to make it better, right? The augmentation of their ability. So together, it's a lot more effective than just kind of using whatever the program itself spits out. And so that's just an example of kind of a basic thing that we're teaching the students, but a lot of it is getting them to understand what technology can actually do for them, right? So how could something like ChatGPT help them create a better prospect list, right? Yeah. What information can it pull for you? How can you use that program to help you reach customers that may be ready to buy sooner than later, right? And so again, it's all about teaching them how to use the tools to make them better at the sales job.
And it makes sense, right? So it's using it as a tool, also using it as a tool where you don't rely on it to do your homework for you, right? Mm-hmm. Like you're using it as a starting point or to then assist you in doing what you do best. And I think there's always those people in any role that could be like, all right, here's an easy way out. Like this is the, this is the shortcut. But again, at some point the shortcut will close up, and then that person will be without that. When it comes to buyers then, right? So we're talking about all of these things, and you're talking about AI selling and buying from AI, which is fascinating and fun. Is what do you see buyers wanting in the future? We talked about it in part two of where you see and what they want from people now, but where do you see that changing from the buyer's perspective?
So from the buyer's perspective, I see very similar, and I think you mentioned it just a minute ago, where you can use the AI technology to give you information, right? To the point where you could build specifications as to whatever your need is. Again, if you're buying like a CRM system, for example, you can ask it questions about various aspects of CRM systems or various capabilities of CRM systems. You can probably give it some parameters within your organization. And so I think from a buyer's perspective, it'll help them kind of organize information better. But I think, again, what we talked about previously is that buyers need to know what questions to ask, right? It's a tool. They have to know how to use the tool. They need to be trained on how to use the tool. In this case, it's how to get the information that they need out of it. And so what I think we'll start seeing salespeople doing is really helping buyers using that AI technology for mutual benefit. Okay, let's look together at what the key parameters are, the key needs are for an organization of 500 employees that sells industrial cleaning equipment. What properties of a CRM system are most important for a company like that, right? And then AI could spit that out and the salesperson can talk about, be like, hey, this is how our product meets these specifications or doesn't. Here are some other questions that we should ask it that you may not have thought of, right? So what it's doing is, again, salespeople working together with buyers to understand and how to best effectively use that technology, right? So I think the relationship between buyers and suppliers and how they make the decisions will change somewhat to be more integrative, again, more augmented by the AI technology.
So with your teams, right? Your students, the future salespeople, where are you helping them understand the balance, and or what are they coming with their thoughts of text, you know, SMS, email, chat versus like phone calls and meetings and in person? Like, what are they bringing with them? And then, you know, where is that balance?
Well, a lot of it is kind of their own personal perceptions. I think that's one of the things that is always challenging with students. And one of the things that I always try and do is get a good understanding of what they think about something before I start talking about it, right? And so with students, I'll use a great example of this is actually radio. And so I always ask my students when we talk about how, in my intro to sales class, we talk about how sales fits in with like a marketing strategy for an organization. So I always ask them about radio. I was like, okay, is it worthwhile to know anything about radio advertising? And most of them are like, no, I don't listen to the radio. I'm like, okay, makes total sense. So, you know, learning about how to put together a 30-second spot for a radio ad doesn't make any sense. Okay. How many of you listen to a podcast? Like most of them raise their hand to be like, okay, how many podcasts do you listen to have advertisements built into them? And like most of them, right? And so what they start to realize is that there is a time and a place for all different types of methodologies. And we try and show them that it's kind of up to them to figure out which ones are most applicable within their industry and to the audience that they're trying to reach, right? So like a traditional TV advertisement, there's still a lot of people that have rabbit ear TVs and still have cable. There's a lot of people that don't. So understanding which of your customers are using which channel, when and why they're most effective. I mean, that's a lot of what we go through in like our marketing major is having students understand all of these different channels and how they can use them to be effective. And then tying that to sales, how can salespeople work with marketing or use these channels to be more effective in their jobs?
So it's interesting because you were talking about the radio spot and the 30-second spot. And you kind of went this way as well. I was thinking your point was going to be that that 18, 20, 22 year old, they're not selling to themselves, right? They, if they're in a sales role selling to a business and selling software, that buyer isn't like them. Mm-hmm. And so I thought that's where you're going to go with that, which you did, you know, thinking about with the buyer and where they're at. But I think that's one of the biggest things I see a lot of people in sales. I've even had that discussion in the past so many times where someone's like, well, why are we doing direct mail? I never open my mail and I would never call somebody on something in the mail. It's like, you're not our customer, right? Mm-hmm. Our customer is doing that. You're not our customer. And so like where that is and helping them and where is that? Like how effective is that? And then, you know, where do you get them to embrace phone calls, embrace the conversations, or are they naturally wanting to do that because they're inclined to a sales role? So they're okay with that. Or is that not a thing that you're seeing?
So are they understand? And I think in the beginning that they don't. It's funny that you mentioned that because that's something that we do work on. I have a couple of role plays where a couple of the objections that we have, if the product is like, well, I would never use this. And the response is, well, okay, like you wouldn't use this, but would your employees use this? Or in another case, it's selling to a retail store. Would your customers buy this product? Right. Mm-hmm. And so we do talk about understanding that it's not about them and their really who they are. It's about the customer, who they're selling to, who they're trying to reach, and thinking about them and their decision making. And so it's funny though that you mentioned this because I constantly send emails to students because that's the only real way that I can directly contact them. It is almost impossible to get them to respond to an email because that's just not what they do. However, like some of my students that I work with on like our sales team or that work on our executive board for our sales club, you text them, they'll text right back. You shoot them an email, you'll never hear anything, right? And it's because they have their own mode of communication. And it's funny because one of the things that we've talked about and we try and talk with our students about is etiquette and understanding the way that other people operate and making sure that they're conscious of if somebody asks them a question in an email, this is like one of my biggest pet peeves. If somebody asks you a direct question in an email, you need to respond. Either yes or no, don't just ignore it, because there's a lot of times where like ghosting is kind of just a thing. It's widely accepted within their generation, but it's like in a professional setting, that's not okay. With a customer, that will never be okay, right? And so it's a process, but it's definitely something that we have to work on.
Well, and furthermore too, if somebody sends you an email, respond to the email, right? If you send an email to someone and they call you back, what they're telling you is, I prefer phone calls.
Yeah.
Right. Or if you call somebody and they text you back, that's what they prefer. And I think the biggest key is especially your lesson about like emailing the students versus like the text response is meeting your customers where they are and how they want to communicate, which is what you're doing with your students because they're your customers, right?
Yeah.
Absolutely. The same way my fiance is a teacher and she deals with international students and they email and they message all the time, like to the students, don't get a response. The teachers have learned to actually create Instagram accounts and have the students follow that account. And then they see those updates in their feed all the time. And then everyone is aware and everyone does their homework and does their part. And it's like, where is your customer? How do they want to communicate instead of you just doing what you want to do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. It's, I mean, if I had all my students' numbers, I would definitely text them, but I don't. And I'm glad they don't have mine either. but yeah, I mean, that's a perfect example of definitely need to meet your customer or your constituents on whatever medium is most appropriate for them.
Yeah. And I think that's something big for salespeople to understand because they'll usually lean to what they want. The ultimate goal should be that phone call or that meeting, because that's how the conversation, especially the trust that we talked about in part one, that's going to be built and then moving it forward. Where it starts, that's kind of up to them, not necessarily up to you. It's up to the potential customer. Ultimately leading. Where I see people go wrong is they try to start on email or text, and then they try to do the whole thing on email and text instead of actually talking to somebody.
Yeah.
And if it's that easy to sell via email or text, they don't need you.
Yeah, 100%.
And so final part here, that I would love to find out. Research that you're seeing, that you're fascinated by, you're excited by in terms of sales. I know you're doing some cool stuff that's not sales related. But like the future of sales from a research standpoint and a understanding standpoint.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think a lot of it is tied to what we've talked about previously, is really understanding how the buying process and selling process needs to adapt to these changes in the buying process, right? Because we saw during COVID, the way that people interacted with each other fundamentally changed when they couldn't literally meet face to face. And there's still some, you know, permanent changes that have occurred because of that. Buyers are buying in different ways. There are different technologies that people have become much more, comfortable with, like we talked about, and maybe a new preferred method as to the way that the buyers want to buy. And so people who have been selling one way up until a couple of years ago need to fundamentally change the way that they sell now. And understanding what those changes are is a big thing. And then the second thing is, how do you train and get people to adapt in a way that they can be successful as quickly as possible, right? And then on top of that, then you add in the technology of like all the changes in technology. How should that be implemented? Should companies be training people on these various technologies? Is there too much technology, not enough technology in certain organizations? Lots and lots and lots of questions around all the changes in this buying and selling process right now.
That's fascinating. I love that mix of like the science of it all and the art, right? Of with sales and understanding people. And then obviously, how do you approach that? I'll give you the final word or final thoughts. Like, what are you excited about in the future of sales? Like, or let me say it this way, for the future of sales.
Mm-hmm. Well, rather selfishly, I think one of the things that I am really excited about is the importance and focus that I think we're seeing on sales and sales education, where, you know, 20 years ago when I was in college, there wasn't even a sales class offered at my school. There were barely any programs across the nation that taught sales, let alone more than like one class in sales. And now there are several hundred universities within the US that are teaching sales classes. We're starting to see this evolution where, you know, education and academia has seen the importance of teaching sales and developing the next generation of sales leaders, because, you know, organizations have, you know, always, I'm not going to say always, but for a while seen the importance of sales, and seeing that kind of growth and evolution of the field of sales, it's being more widely accepted now as a valuable career, people really understanding how important sales is to the health and vitality of organizations. Like, I'm really excited to see where we go in the next 10, 20 years as more and more students are graduating with degrees in sales, more organizations are getting involved in developing the next generation of sales leaders. I think it's going to be pretty exciting.
I love it. I think that's such a good vision, and it has come a long way. I tell people all the time, when I was writing my book and editing it in 2020, I literally had to change a paragraph in there because I said, you can't go to school and take a class on sales. Well, I wrote that in 2019, and in 2020, I found out that schools have sales programs, and they've had them for 25 years, right? Like, mm-hmm. Dr. Terry Lowe started the national sales competition 25 years ago. Yeah. And so most people aren't aware of it, which is why mm-hmm. I have people like you on the podcast this season, because I just want to mm-hmm. show everyone and help everyone understand this. And then where is it going to go as over the next 20 years, if there's 250, 280 schools with some level of a sales course all the way to a degree, give it another 20 years to get more momentum. And then what will that do to creating an actual profession? So I love it. Mm-hmm. Great place to stop. It's not just self-centered for you. It's for everybody. Like I say all the time, I do a lot of this because it's self-centered for me. As a mm-hmm. buyer, I want to actually interact with good salespeople who know mm-hmm. how to help me. So it's really for me. I help other people sell, but it's really for me as a customer, because I'm mm-hmm. tired of bad or gross or unprofessional. And I just want to, I want help from somebody who knows how to help me. And so I love it. For people who want to find out more, as always, the links will be in the show notes. They can find you on LinkedIn. Kevin Chase 16. They can find Dr. Kevin Chase, Washington State University. And then the link will be in the show notes, but if people want to search for it, WSU's professional sales program, and they can find that through there. Again, thank you, Dr. Kevin, for being here, for sharing all this, for running the gauntlet of authenticity, persuasion, and the future of sales, and all the stuff that we talked about in this 70, 80 minutes of recording sessions here. Thanks for giving all this for this. And then of course, what you're doing with your students and just what you're giving back to the future of sales. So I appreciate it. Thank you for all that you do.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. I've really enjoyed the opportunity to talk a little bit about our program and definitely the future of sales. So thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. I love it. And thank you everyone for tuning in, for being a part of this. Like Dr. Kevin said, and like I said, shifting the way sales is done, getting it away from either dirty, an experience or just a bad experience where you wanted help and somebody doesn't know how to actually help you. And that's even sometimes even more frustrating than, the negative experience. It's just a blah experience. So thank you for being a part of this journey. And until next time, thank you for helping fill the world with authentic persuaders.